Chapter 6. We came in low around a planetoid that my mission briefing had called Luna, Old Earth's moon. I couldn't make out much by starlight, but the place reminded me of Detritus, a vast, dark planetoid, surface broken by craters, forlorn, abandoned by time, and with no defensive shell to hide and protect it. Old Earth had vanished centuries ago, leaving this moon in a lonely orbit around Sol. Our enemy had built their base here. Kuna said it was because this region was already quarantined, kept off maps, with no travel in or out except for military reasons. So, we humans came home, in a way, for this mission. Only at the same time, we didn't, because Old Earth wasn't here, and nobody knew where it had gone. That was a mystery for another day, however. Today, I had a secret facility to raid. Our plan was straightforward. In roughly 10 minutes, we would come into range of the base's sensors. Soon after, we'd reach the base itself. The place would have an inhibitor, a slug with powers preventing us from using cytonics. Fortunately, Kuna had visited this installation several times and knew where the inhibitor was. Whenever a high official visited a superiority base, one of their jobs was to check that protocol was being followed for protecting sensitive equipment, namely cytonic equipment. Very, very few people in the superiority even knew that Tainic slugs were the source of these powers. Kuna had given us the location, a small bunker marked on my map at the edge of the installation. We would destroy that as quickly as possible. Once the inhibitor was down, we could set up our own. Ned was in charge of that, with his wingmate Arturo protecting him. The two would also be defended by Sadie and a Kitson battleship, not much larger than my fighter, but laden with 10 times the firepower. We had very few inhibitor slugs, unfortunately, and had brought only 2 on this mission. One was with Ned. The backup was on the Kitson ship. Once our inhibitor was in place, it would block the enemy from calling for help and would prevent them from receiving immediate backup, even if a call went out before we got our inhibitor up. We'd be free to fully engage any enemy fighters, and we could send for our own backup if we needed it. Everything in these battles depended on cytonics and slugs. Those who could teleport freely would almost certainly win, while those who couldn't would be in trouble. Once we had control of the region, we'd send a strike force into a specific building, a tall structure marked on my map. Kuna said it held the data storage. Our strike force would recover the information, then we'd all hyperjump away. I went over these steps in my mind as we soared across the surface of Luna. As a child, I'd listened to Gran-Gran describe the moon in so many different ways, as a knowing companion, always watching from the sky, as a brilliant silvery drop of metal, as a herald of the changing days, mysteriously linked to the woman's body in particular. Then in school, I'd seen slides of it from the remnants of our archives, just a desolate chunk of rock. I'd had trouble reconciling the beautiful, friendly, mysterious body of the stories with, well, this hunk of stone. Why had the ancient humans described it with such poetry? They'd been lonely, I'd decided. Lonely in the universe, unaware of the many other species out there. Lonely in relation to the sky, so uncomfortably open and empty.
5 minutes until you arrive, Kuna said over the comm as we swept in along the surface of the moon. Remember to send the code I gave you. I hope you enjoy this reunion with what was once a very important location in human lore.
I glanced out the canopy, watching the surface pass as we emerged into the light of the nearby sun. Though we buzzed in frightfully close to the surface, the minuscule atmosphere meant our passing barely disturbed the dust.
What of Old Earth? Ned asked. Isn't there any sign of it at all?
None, Kuna said. The Earth Disappearance Station was initially set up here to study what might have happened to the planet. But even the best scientists, working with licensed and very rare superiority cytonics, could find no trace of it. Your homeworld is well and truly gone.
They'd given us an explanation earlier, filling in gaps in our records from Detritus. At some point during the final human war, the united forces of the galaxy, forged into a cohesive government to resist the human menace, had launched an all-out attack on Earth. When they'd arrived, they'd found only empty space and an abandoned moon, cast away like a piece of debris blown off a fleeing battleship. Even with that explanation, I felt as if I would find old Earth peeking above the horizon, waiting there, a blue ball of legend and myth, cradle of life and stories. My ship's system even had a phantom circle on the proximity monitor to display where it would have been. Nothing. Black, empty space. Earth had passed into the legends it had spawned.
"Perhaps," Embot said in my mind, "it's a ghost, like me."
"You're joking, but you could be kind of right," I thought back at him. "Detritus proves that entire planets can move using cytonics. Maybe Earth teleported away to avoid invasion? But if Earth had moved to a safe location, why had the humans on it never emerged? Were they in hiding?"
"Eyes up," Arturo said to us over the line. "Installation should be visible any moment now."
We had brought only 13 ships. Skyward flight, veneer flight, and one Kitsin battleship, all under Arturo's command. That was a fraction of our forces, but the more we brought, the more likely the enemy would be to spot us. In a war where both sides could supply reinforcements in the blink of an eye, stealth trumped numbers. Once we had inhibitor dominance, we could bring in as much of our fleet as we wanted. Exactly when Kuna had said they would, the enemy sent an authentication request via hypercom. My cytonic senses picked it up right before Hesho, using some newer technology acquired during my absence, noticed it on the comms. I almost responded, bypassing the equipment. Instead, I left it to Arturo, who sent Kuna's code in reply. We were hoping that it would buy us a few minutes, assuming Winzik had forgotten to get Kuna's authorization codes changed since we'd rescued them. Moments later, we came upon the installation. My cytonic senses immediately winked off, and I felt blinded. We'd hit their inhibitor field. Chet trembled and seemed to grow smaller. Though Delvers weren't stopped by inhibitors, they could feel them and didn't like the sensation. Embot, who had been humming to himself, vanished. A single slug, enhanced with some technology, could provide a fairly large bubble of protection, kilometers across. That was big, at least on the scale of one person or a base like this. When flying out in space, kilometers could pass incredibly quickly. Still, I felt exposed, trapped. To distract myself, I focused on the base itself. Simply referred to as the EDS, the station had been built in the ruins of New Beijing, which had fallen quickly after Earth had disappeared. All humans had long since been removed from the facility. Element-specific gravity gave the base, which was settled into a large crater, a bubble of pressurized air. That, together with radiation skimmers, made the location livable. Even knowing that, I was shocked to see greenery around the city. Trees were an incongruous sight around the perimeter, just inside the bubble. But, of course, biological methods of oxygen recycling would be planted, if only as a backup if the mechanical scrubbers went down. What lay beyond the trees was even more unnerving. The structures inside the bubble were dotted with lights, and while the place wasn't packed with buildings like Starsight had been, the roads were still busy. It had parks, restaurants, apartments. Scud. I'd imagined some secret military base, squat like a beetle huddled against the stone. Not a sprawling city.
"Shot off,"
Kimmelin said, firing her sniping destructor precisely. A flare went up inside the city.
"That should have been their inhibitor."
I tried hard not to think about the cost of that shot.
but I did know FM and Jorgen had argued long and hard about the necessity of it. He had made good arguments. That in war, you couldn't worry that the battleship you brought down had a janitorial and medical staff on it. That you couldn't worry if the enemy trying to kill you had been pressed to fight against their will, as had been done to many, many soldiers throughout history. You just had to survive. Once, I'd have agreed with him. But now, I heard FM's vigorous objections in the back of my mind. Was there another way? There should have been another way, right? Still, with the fall of that small bunker, my senses returned. Embot's humming resumed, as if he hadn't even noticed. Chet stretched, and I felt my anxiety decrease. Ned, Arturo, and the Kitson ship, named the Iron Fortress, soared ahead of us. "Hey, Hesho," I said. "Is Iron Fortress the full name of the Kitson ship? Or is it actually the Iron Fortress of poetic words said after a held breath or something?" When I'd flown with Hesho before, his ship had been named something beautiful. I found this one surprisingly mundane.
"Just Iron Fortress," he said with a smile. "The captain gets to name the ship. You will find many Kitson who like names as I do, but there are some who prefer simple clarity." He paused. "I will miss naming opportunities a great deal. It was one of my previous duties. We shall see if my traditions last. Though I am not alone in my love for poetry, I am among the more obtuse in that regard."
I'd always had a sense that Hesho was a little odd, not just because of the Emperor thing. We all watched, tense, as Ned and the Iron Fortress flew into position, hovering above the base, and activated their own inhibitors. Our tech wasn't as good as the Superiorities, but we still managed to get a field up that covered the entire city. Hopefully, it would at least slow down any reinforcements. The rest of us streaked forward, and I got more visuals on the place. So ordinary. So full of life. "Anyone else uncomfortable about this?" I asked over the line.
"Yeah," Arturo said. "Admiral, you seeing these visuals?"
"What's wrong?"
Jorgen asked from base.
"I'm looking at what you're sending, but I'm not reading anything odd. Are there defenses I'm not spotting?"
"It's not the defenses," I said, "but the lack of them. Jorgen, we're raiding a city."
"City,"
Doomslug fluted softly. The lights on my dash flickered.
"Direct private call from him," Hesho said. "Patching you through."
"Spin,"
Jorgen said in my helmet a moment later. He could have spoken directly into my head, but we were trying to get into the habit of using communication slugs, as it worked better for everyone else.
"You need to see this through."
Ahead of us, a local defense force had started scrambling. A few enemy fighters were rising into the air. Not many. Scud, they barely had anything. "Jorgen, those look like police ships, not true military vessels."
"They will try to kill you either way," he said. "Listen, this is a secret military base. They are guarding military assets of an incredibly valuable nature."
"But, Jorgen, there are families down there."
"Unfortunately," he said, "this kind of operation needs to be extremely tightly controlled. You want people committed to long-term service, since every person you transfer out is another one who can potentially leak the location. So you build a city out of it. Let everyone settle down."
"And we're going to attack them," I said softly.
"No, we're going to raid their information storage," Jorgen said. "Spin, I'm sorry, but this is what battle is like. What happened to the bloodthirsty warrior? I'm sure Alexander the Great wouldn't have had second thoughts about a raid like this."
"Alexander the Great was a monster," I said. "Most of them were, Jorgen, even if the stories dodge the issue. I'd lived among these people now. I couldn't see things as I once had. Still, I trailed off. My friends and I were fighting for survival against a much more powerful force, led by people who were decidedly evil.
Did I think I was going to be able to go to war without causing casualties? It was just, this was the first time I'd gone into a true battle against the superiority since living on Starsight. How many of the pilots I was about to kill were like Morimer? Good, decent people in the wrong place. How many people down there just wanted to live? Scud. First the slug, now this. Could I live with every stray shot I fired potentially blasting through an apartment window and vaporizing civilians? I didn't have much choice, because the enemy ships were upon us. Fewer than 20 in all. Enough to be dangerous, but not the swarm we'd feared. They had obviously intended this base's clandestine nature to protect it.
"Our cytonic inhibitor is working," Ned said over the comm. "Lucky here is doing her job beautifully."
He and the Kitson ship would remain on the defensive, keeping the inhibitor field up. Arturo and Sadie would protect them. Hopefully, we had put that inhibitor up fast enough to prevent the enemy from even calling for help. The ships that engaged us were at least competent, working in formations, trying to chase us into losing our wingmates, guarding the way forward to prevent us from flying together into the center of the city. I immediately pulled to the right, away from the barrage of oncoming destructor fire, and swept the perimeter of the bubble. Kimmelin followed, as capable a wingmate as I'd ever had. We buzzed past a set of gun emplacements, huge anti-aircraft guns that were pointed toward the sky. Those would have decimated any larger ships that had gotten close, but were too long-ranged to bother us. One of the reasons we'd come in low and from the side was to stay under them. I could imagine the frustration of the people inside, watching their city be attacked, unable to do anything.
"All right, everyone," Arturo said. "Skyward flight, engage those fighters and keep them busy. Vanir flight, your incursion. Get close to the installation, scout it visually, then have your slugs hyperjump your marines inside."
Vanir was a small flight, just 4 Sportas, 4-seater fighters, each carrying a team of marines. Not quite carrier ships, intended for fast maneuverability and combat, they could drop off 3 ground troops when needed. Today, they'd send their ground forces in to steal the information we wanted. The rest of us just had to keep the fighters busy. Fortunately, the little fighters we were facing were very unlikely to have slugs of their own, so even if one got beyond our inhibitor field, they wouldn't be able to call for help.
"Watch your right,"
Hesho noted, and I dodged by instinct, avoiding a trail of destructor fire.
"Wanna try a hatch maneuver?"
Kimmelin said, banking alongside me. That was a ploy where I would go into a frantic set of dodges to convince the enemy ships I was panicking. "Not yet," I said. "Let's give them a chase first, so we can see how good they are."
"Roger that, Spin," Kimmelin said.
I went into a set of evasives, the challenging, flowery type. Kimmelin and I spun and looped, broke apart and curved back together, soared upward and sideways, dodging the fire from behind with poise. These pilots behind us were good, and the ships had actual people in the cockpits rather than being piloted remotely. That was rare for the superiority. Only their best fought in person. That said, I'd faced Delvers throwing hundreds of ships at me at once. Compared to that, these, well, they weren't much of a challenge. I stuck to the outside of the bubble of air, keeping a full 6 of the ships busy. Kimmelin kept up with me, and together we didn't take a single hit to our shields.
"Spin," Jorgen said over the line. "What are you doing?"
"Dealing with more than my share of fighters," I said, pulling into a dive. "Anyone else and their wingmate handling 6 at once?"
"You haven't fired a single shot,"
Jorgen noted. "I don't need to." He fell silent.
"Understood,"
he said. I watched the proximity monitor as I flew, and Hesho helpfully highlighted the incursion team. They'd pushed inward, toward the center of the city. There, they buzzed a specific skyscraper with shiny black windows, the place Kuna indicated was the information storage facility. Inside, we could find all kinds of useful data, including the locations of the mining stations where the enemy got their acclivity stone.
Some among the military were still suspicious of Kuna, worrying they were a plant. I didn't have those concerns. Winzik had legitimately tried to kill Kuna, who, in turn, had already offered information and aid that would have been incredibly stupid to release if they were a spy. As the incursion team finished their sweep of the data storage building, a dozen more of our ships arrived as reinforcements. The enemy fighters were good, but now they were severely outgunned, and my team included the best pilots in the galaxy. Enemy ships started going up in flowers of flame, but so far we'd only lost one fighter, Catnip, who, according to Hesho's monitor, had hyperjumped with his slug to safety. I should have known it was too good to last.
Scud, Breakaway said over the comm.
She was leading Vanir flight, and therefore the incursion force.
Admiral, there's a shield on this building as we expected, but there's also a second inhibitor field here covering just this structure.
What? Kuna said. That's... I'm sorry. It must have been set up after my previous visit.
Scud,
Jorgen said in my ear. The Iron Fortress had sophisticated scanning equipment and would be sending up to the second scans of the region and the fighters back to headquarters.
That's a wrinkle. Breakaway, can you... Wait, what's that?
I scanned the battlefield, flying by instinct, looking for whatever he'd noticed. All through the city, rooftops were opening and guns were rising from them. AA guns. Smaller, shorter-ranged, designed to hit starfighters. They had waited to deploy them until our team got close to the city center, where they'd be surrounded.
Defensive maneuvers, Arturo said. All ships!
Vanir flight immediately scattered as the guns started unloading on them. I held my breath, but the shots mostly missed. We lost one Vanir ship, and I waited for confirmation the crew had been hyperjumped to safety in time. Yellow light on the comm. Some casualties from that explosion. We'd lost at least one of the four on the ship. Scud! Still, the others dodged successfully. A modern ship with a good pilot was more maneuverable than a turret. Unfortunately, this threw a huge wrinkle into the plan. How would we break into the base if we had to be on the defensive the whole time?
Spin, Kimmelin said. That looks bad.
As she said it, the ships tailing us got off a lucky shot on me, the destructor fire rippling across the surface of my shield, briefly illuminating the shell that protected my ship.
Shield at 65%, Hesha warned. That was a solid hit.
I nodded. The city didn't have its own shield, though several of the more important buildings clearly had individual ones. Better to protect the most vital areas with high-powered shields than to have a single, larger, thin one easily breakable. I focused on my evasion, pushing into a dive. Kimmelin and I spun around one another, bright destructor blasts raining past us like burning meteorites. Sprays of them hit the city below, blooms of fire rising along a street as flying cars exploded while fleeing the firefight.
Scud! Were my opponents that ruthless?
That uncaring of the non-combatants the stray fire was killing? No. No, I knew better. I imagined the anguish they felt being forced to defend their city, knowing each shot might kill people they knew, people they loved. The enemy pilots were doing their jobs, and sometimes the job sucked.
Spin!
Kimmelin said as we pulled into a loop over the city.
All right, everyone, Arturo said, his voice tense. We'll get picked off if we keep this up. Swing back in a Stuart formation, planning to angle straight toward the target. First squad on mark 118, squad 2 follow. Ned, you...
Ned's ship went up in a burst of fire. Gone in a second, the powerful AA guns blasting straight through his shield.
Scud, Arturo screamed. Ned!
In that moment, all of the enemy ships, even those tailing me, turned and swarmed the Kitson ship Iron Fortress.
Protect the Kitson ship, Jorgen said over the line. All pilots!
It was too late. A dozen shots hit the Kitson ship, and as its shield went down, it hyperjumped away.
Jorgen, Arturo said. Ned, stay focused,
Jorgen said. Medical will send information when they have it. Go, everyone!
We obeyed, following Arturo's commands. I couldn't help but watch my dash. My heart wrenched, my insides twisting. Then a yellow light came on next to Ned's name. At least one casualty. Either Ned or his slug was gone.
Stay sharp, Jorgen shouted. Our inhibitors are both down. The enemy will send for help. No time to delay.
I reached the top of my loop and started another dive. A brilliant, dazzling blast from the AA guns nearly took out Arturo, who was forced to hyperjump away, his shield down. Everyone else was scattering. Jorgen sent reinforcements. I saw another flight appearing on the monitors.
Prepare to abandon mission, Jorgen said.
Spin, Kimmelin said. Please! Everything started to shake, my cockpit vibrating as my soul trembled. I snapped my eyes open, pulled out of my dive, and screamed. Angry at the enemy, at my own frailty, at Winzik for forcing my hand. Angry at the universe for having no answers. I moved my finger onto the trigger of my destructors and, hating everything about this, took aim at the first enemy I saw and started firing.
Chapter 7. They dodged, but I felt them do it. My time in the nowhere had changed me, given me the ability to reach out and communicate. I'd reached into the past in special circumstances, so it was easy to push through defenses and into mines, and I felt the person in that ship ahead of me. A Dione with a family, thinking about their three children as they realized I was on their tail. I felt them plan a feint to the side, then a turn to try to lead me left in a dive, straight into the line of AA fire. My expanding powers were so wondrous and amazing, which made it extra horrifying to see how callously my instincts, aware of the enemy's movements, Sun Tzu would have approved, traced the enemy's upcoming path perfectly. They ran into each of my shots as they tried to dodge. Their mind winked out, like a communication line suddenly cut. The beautiful things I'd learned became, in my terrible hands, just another way to kill. My soul still vibrating, my mind alight with anger and fire, I hit my overburn and kept on killing. I sliced through the battlefield like a razor blade across a throat. Enemy ships went up in blasts of light as I cut in behind them, offering no sporting chance. This wasn't sport. This was a cauterization. This was cutting off the hand before the body could die. I brought down 6 in the next few minutes. All of the AA guns, reasonably, started firing on me. I swept low through the city, shattering windows with my passing, putting obstacles between me and the guns.
Spencer, Embot said softly, I feel you.
I gritted my teeth as my systems highlighted the firing positions of each of the AA guns. I swung up along an apartment building, intending to crest the top and unleash some shots at those emplacements, but in my agony, my soul freaked out. I could feel Chet in there, feel him in pain, an agony that mirrored my own. Chunks of the building next to me began to vanish. Then, as I darted out over the top, they began to appear in the air between me and the guns, intercepting the barrage of shots that tried to trace my ship. Chunks of steel appeared above the emplacements themselves, crashing down and smashing them one after another, causing explosions that rocked the entire city, debris spraying high into the air, trailing smoke spiraling toward the void. The few remaining enemy ships arrayed to try to stop me. I mopped them up almost unconsciously, shooting down 3 and then smashing the last 2 out of the sky with chunks of steel the size of hover cars. The battlefield fell still. Almost a third of the city was on fire, smoke bleeding from wounds where the AA guns had gone up. The last pieces of the defending ships rained down as sparks, sprinkling the city like molten rain.
The line stayed quiet as I clutched my control sphere and throttle in sweaty hands, my cockpit vibrating, random objects, a cup, a pair of glasses, a child's stuffed toy, appearing in the air beside me, then dropping to hit my chair or arms. Sweat streamed from my forehead and I couldn't blink, couldn't move, other than to tremble.
"Sweetest stars," Kimmelin whispered over the comm, "and the Lord God that birthed them."
Jorgen cleared his throat.
"Belay the retreat. Enemy defensive position eliminated. Nice work, Spin."
"Shut up," I started to whisper, but bit it off. I was the one who always bragged about killing, about the way of the warrior, all of that nonsense. Hesho muted the comm.
"Take your time," he said softly. "Breathe. In and out. Focus only on each new breath."
I nodded, doing as he suggested, and forced myself back under control. My cockpit stopped vibrating. "Ned," I said. Hesho turned on the comm, putting a direct call in to Jorgen.
"Admiral, we would like to know the situation of call sign Netter, if it is known."
"He arrived, burned and unconscious," Jorgen said. "No sign of his slugs. We think Lucky died in the initial shot that hit the ship, and Chubbs sent him back, but didn't come himself."
I got an image in my head from Doomslug, fluting quietly from her sling. Pain. Chubbs had been wounded. Sending Ned had been his final act. I closed my eyes, feeling Doomslug's pain as my own.
"He should survive," Jorgen said. "But, well, he'll probably never fly again. Not with only one arm. I'm sorry."
"It's war," I whispered, hoarse. "And we're soldiers."
"Nevertheless," Jorgen said, "let's pull you out to rest. Arturo is ready to come back in and the team can—"
"No," I said. "I'll see it through." He didn't contradict me, so I took a deep breath and pointedly didn't look at the large sections of the city I'd destroyed.
"Incursion squad on me," I said. "Kimmelin, our target building is still shielded. Get it down. Skyward flight, provide air support, and be ready to pull us out if something goes wrong."
I got a handful of affirmative replies, and not a one called me out on taking command in Arturo's absence. Technically, T-Stall was next in line, but I wasn't in a mood to pay attention to the chain of command. Honestly, I hadn't ever been good at it. Even when I hadn't been a one-woman apocalypse with a fruit-flavored Delver filling. Kimmelin's ship was equipped with a shield cutter. She led the way to the large black skyscraper at the center of the EDS. She hovered there, rotating her ship with the acclivity ring unhinging, so she could position the bottom of her ship as close as possible to the building. Her vessel let out a bright blue blast, reminiscent of an IMP, but far more concentrated. That knocked out the building's shield. I did a long, slow pass along the tower, starting at the top, flying down in a spiral around the outside, centimeters from the wall. Yes, I could feel what had been reported earlier. This building had a second inhibitor, secret and unexpected. I wondered if I could get a sense of where the thing was based on the field it projected. Only, with mechanical augmentation, the fields an inhibitor slug made could be various shapes, so...
"Floor 37, Chet said. "Directly in the center of the building. I can cut through the inhibitor and see it hiding there."
"Kimmelin," I said, "I need a hole in the wall on the 37th floor. Incursion team, prepare to breach there. We're going to find the inhibitor. My senses tell me it's at the direct center of that floor." "Roger," Kimmelin said, using her specialized destructor to cut a hole in the wall. The chunk of stone and steel from the wall fell free, edges glowing with heat. I flew my ship over and hit the cockpit release. "Hesho, if something goes wrong, how confident are you in flying this ship?"
With the minimal controls I have? He asked, not terribly confident. But I shall endeavor to do my best in the event of a disaster.
Good enough. As I twisted to undo the quick release on my buckles, Doomslug fluted and appeared on my lap, jumping out of her sling. You sure? I asked her. We can't get out until we bring down the inhibitor inside. She fluted in the affirmative, so I scooped her up as I climbed out. She went into a holster on my hip, slung across my opposite shoulder. The others called them slings, but that felt, I don't know, like the thing a mom would use to bring her baby along. Unnerved, even a little nauseated, by my powers as I was, I still wasn't going to bring a baby sling into battle. I was bringing a slug holster. I unclipped a fully automatic assault rifle from its place at the side of the cockpit, and the three remaining ships from Vanir flight joined me, each carrying three members of our newly christened Marine Corps. We never had much in the way of ground forces, but we're rectifying that in the face of the increasing need for assaults like this. Ned, in particular, had enjoyed finally being given time on the firing range for... No, don't think about Ned. Wolf was the leader of the Marine Force, and as Junker opened his canopy for her, she stood up and waved to me. Wolf was a tall, hard-faced woman with body armor and one lock of blue hair. Her non-code name was Chono, which was apparently Mongolian. When I'd asked if she was related to the Great Khan, she'd simply said, "Of course." I'd tried not to gush too much. It had been difficult. She and I shared a nod, then leaped off the fronts of our hovering ships into the hull, our guns up. The city had artificial gravity, fortunately, and so we didn't have trouble walking or moving. We activated flashlights on the front of our muzzles as the other eight Marines followed quietly, each of them with their own slug holster. Unfortunately, I just entered a deeper darkness than the physical kind, because my cytonic senses once again vanished, smothered by the blanket of the inhibitor field.
I have the description of the building that Kuna provided, Hesho said through my helmet speaker, and I am coordinating with command. We are trying to guess the direction you need to go to reach the inhibitor, if that would be of assistance.
That would be scudding wonderful, I whispered back. A square box appeared in the corner of my helmet's visor. A red dot indicated I was at the perimeter, and a blinking dot in the center highlighted our target. It didn't have any of the internal features of the floor, but it was helpful in getting me where I needed to go. There were some locked doors in the way, but that was why the Saints had made destructors. As soon as we knocked out the first, though, return fire came blasting from the darkness, forcing us back into the sides. Sadie, Kimmelin, I said, we're pinned down. You have our locations?
Sure do, Sadie said.
Kindly make us a path. Kimmelin cut another hole in the wall, and Sadie filled it with destructor fire, pointed inward. Ship weapons were of an entirely different category than the handheld ones we had, and in moments the shots wound down, and we were able to pick through the remnants of the wall and continue forward. Muzzle flashlights lit the remaining pieces of our enemies, something that... As a starfighter pilot, I didn't often have to confront. They prop up an evil dictatorship, I reminded myself. This is part of the same force that murdered my father. I knew the weakness in that reasoning, but it was enough to keep me focused as, after a brief shootout with the last remaining enemy squad, we reached the location of Hesho's blinking light. I found the box, well-locked and disguised as a storage container among many other similar ones. When I popped it open, I found a terrified blue and green slug inside. Doomslug fluted, and the other one stretched out a little, sniffing toward the air. That's right, I said, scooping her up. We're friends. Doomslug fluted again, then, brilliantly, awareness returned to me. Doomslug and the rescued slug vanished. Wolf, I said, inhibitor field is down. This is your mission now.
Excellent, she said. Data storage is on floor 36. Kuna doesn't know where. She took an elevator up and says she got a little turned around. I nodded, not correcting Wolf on the use of she for a Dione. Together, the Marines had a quick conference, then one placed some explosives on the floor. We took cover and they blasted it open. I hyperjumped down, then waited as the Marines rappelled through the hole. While they worked, I reached out with my senses.
There are 6 enemies approaching, I sent to Wolf, implanting the words in her mind. She jumped, then looked at me and nodded. They've stopped, I sent, pointing through the darkness, lit by some fires on the ceiling, toward a hallway. Down this hall, probably setting up an ambush. She tossed a grenade at the wall, bouncing it toward the people farther down. We went in after the explosion, eliminating the soldiers with callous precision, muzzles flaring and destructors lighting the smoke. I blocked the thoughts and emotions of the dying from my mind. It didn't take much effort to locate the data storage. We simply moved in a search pattern until we found a metal door, reinforced and protected, with a lot of people on the other side. I picked up some of their emotions. Nervousness, waiting for help, scientists. Yeah, this was the place. Some 20 people working inside, I sent to Wolf. No way to tell how many are civilians. You willing to do this in a way that keeps us from firing on anyone we don't need to? She looked to me, then nodded. Take a deep breath, I sent her. Have your slug ready to get you out if this goes wrong. Then I hyperjumped the two of us into the room, near one of the mines I could feel, but back behind the rest of them. We immediately raised guns, ignoring the scientists and technicians. Each of us fired twice, drilling through the skulls of the soldiers waiting by the doors, their backs to us. Scud. I'd never felt so sick to fire a weapon. Was this what I'd signed up for? Fighting the Krell, an unknowable, evil force, felt so far removed from what we were doing here. Now we were the unknowable force. I was the thing that terrorized these people, possessing powers and abilities they didn't understand. We gathered the scientists at the rear of the room, their hands up and trembling. Wolf watched them while I opened the door from the inside, letting the rest of the team in. A few seconds later, Rig and a crew of technicians appeared in the room, sent by Jorgen. He didn't have much hyperjumping ability, but could persuade the slugs mind to mind to do it if he knew where to tell them to go. Rig's team quickly began working on the data storages, grabbing a copy of basically every sensitive and secret piece of information the Superiority owned. All the things that M'Bot and I had wanted to discover on Starsight, but had been locked out of. As Rig worked on the data, I patrolled the front of the room, near the engineers' stations. On several of the screens, a familiar Varvax stood in front of an official seal. Winzik had a deep green carapace, bipedal and hulking, like a suit of armor to protect the far more fragile crab-like being who rode inside. I could see him through the helmet's faceplate, floating in a liquid solution. I gestured to one of Rig's engineers, and the woman helpfully hit a few buttons, rewinding the message and playing it from the beginning. I kept my cytonic senses alert for anyone approaching, then leaned down and let my translator pin feed me Winzik's words. "My goodly people of the Superiority's multitudinous worlds, I am Provisional High General Winzik, as many of you know. It is my burden and regret that I have been forced into the position of temporary commander of the Superiority during this time of grave danger. Understand that I take this duty as the most solemn of responsibilities. Those of us of prime intelligence bear a heavy charge, that of protecting and nurturing those who have not yet achieved equivalent status. My words today are thus for the weaker of our wonderful species. Your natural inclination might be toward panic, anger, or even violence. My, my, how terrible it must be to live with secondary intelligence. You must resist these shocking emotions. The Superiority is strong, and those of us who lead it will protect you from the human scourge.
As the galaxy has survived their horrific attacks in the past, so we will weather them this time. Already, we have the outbreak partially contained, and the fighting is limited to the outskirts of the superiority. It might take decades to properly bring the humans down, but I am determined to do the job asked of me. For now, know that there is absolutely no danger to you. It is the duty of those of us who have achieved primary intelligence to fight on your behalf. So you do not have to risk the dangers of aggression and rage. Live your lives as usual, knowing I will protect you.
On one hand, I was impressed. Winzik could likely milk this for decades, pretending that, even long after we'd been defeated, he needed this power to protect everyone from the terrifying humans. On the other hand, if Winzik actually thought he could contain me, then he would soon find out firsthand how wrong he was. On the screen, the message started repeating, and rather than hear it again, I shot the monitor a few times. When the others looked at me in shock, I gave them a shrug. "I'm sorry," Embot said in my head, perhaps sensing my frustration at the situation, "for what you had to do today."
"It's my job," I whispered to him, watching the door, my gun at the ready.
"It's not what you dreamed."
"I gave up that dream in the nowhere," I said to him. "I could have stayed there, fighting battles without consequences. I came back because things like this have to happen."
"Do they?"
"For now," I said. "The goal is to stop them from being necessary, somehow." That was the difference. It had to be. Winzik was intent on domination, destruction, and even extermination. We fought for something better. I knew the same justification had been used by virtually every terrorist force in the past. I wasn't naive, but I also wasn't so cynical or so foolish as to paint them all as equivalent. A woman had to follow her conscience. I believed in what we were doing. It still felt terrible. I glanced to Rig.
"I think we can pull all of this out," he whispered to me. "Why copy when we can just take?"
He grinned, then pointed to several slugs they'd set up. "Cool." He hyperjumped out with his team, taking multiple large data storages with them, servers and all. Seconds later, my strike force, all of us back in our ships, hyperjumped away after him. And to those we'd left alive, I knew we'd be just as mysterious and terrible as the Krell had been to me.